tuned in to the Behind the Scenes podcast with your host, Man Robinson, the place where educational, motivational, and inspiration collide with innovation. Be entertained while learning from some of the best actors, directors, and producers in the industry today with self-help tips that you can apply in your career. We don't just talk about it, we be about it.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Scenes, and I'm your host, Man Robinson. Today, we have one of my friends and phenomenal director and writer, Mr. Coke Daniels. He has a long list of film credits and has been in the game a long time. We'll get to that later. Right now, we want to talk about our hot topics, and our hot topic today is how to make a film independently. That's the topic. So hopefully Coke Daniels can help us out with that and get some pointers and some views from his wonderful mind of film.
And now it's time for Man Robinson's Motivational Thought. Black movie star, motivational and inspirational. Black movie star.
Okay, so today's black movie star, you already know what it is. It is my motivated thought, which is black movie star. And black movie star today, UNITY, y'all don't know what I'm saying. Y'all, no idea what I'm saying. Queen Latifah is my black movie star, and that's a real deal. She started in music. That was the 80s, if y'all don't know. She's still here now. She's still relevant as ever. You want to know how she's relevant? Try to call her. Try to hit her on Instagram. See if she responds. There's about 27, 30, 40, 50 people going to respond for her, if they even respond. Queen Latifah. I don't know about the situation on the one movie. Everybody know what I'm talking about. But all the rest of it, classic, top notch. Best female actor from a previous category, which is rap, Queen Latifah. If y'all like my black movie star, you can hit me up on Instagram, Man with Two N's Robinson, and let me know what y'all think about my black movie star of this episode, Miss Queen Latifah. Back to the show.
Welcome back to Behind the Scenes with Man Robinson. We don't just talk about it, we be about it.
Welcome back to Behind the Scenes with Man Robinson. And like I told y'all, we have a guest today that's dope. We use that word together. He dope. He say I'm dope. I guess we dope together. We worked on a film together, I'll be in 2018, and it was a success. So hopefully we can use that to navigate our way through this conversation. And we have one and only Mr. Coke Daniels. What's up, my brother?
What up with you, man?
Oh, man, I'm just chilling, man. I'm in quarantine, man.
That's right, me too. I said, it's good to see you, man. I ain't seen you in a minute, you know what I mean?
I know. I mean, you look just as good on here as, you know.
Right. Even better. Even better. I'm very photogenic. Yeah. Very photogenic.
Yeah, you are, man. You know, just.
Hey, but, yeah. You know, yeah, man, it's good. We got technology, man. I like what you're doing, man. I'm happy you invited me on, and I think this is dope, man. I think, you know, you on to something with this platform. Like, it's always, I'm always looking to hear other filmmakers talk and share experiences and stuff like that. So I think this is a good look for you, bro.
Yeah, I think the technology has been there for years. But it's now it's like, okay, how can we talk to each other? How can we, you know, work with each other? Because now we can't be around each other, you know? So how do you do it? You know, so our topic today, man, and I watched you do it. You know, I watched you put a film together independently. And I know that you were told no. And the obstacles in front of you, and you still made it happen. And not only did you make it happen, it got to the promised land. Of places that a lot of people don't get to go, man. So, you know,
yeah.
Talk to us, man. Tell us, first of all, tell us how quarantine is going. How is that? What are you doing to pass your time?
I mean, I'm already kind of a social distancing type of person anyway. As you know, I'm kind of not a loner. I mean, obviously I've got family and friends and stuff like that, but I'll be in my own space. So, you know, it's going, man. Spending more time with the kids, which is enjoyable, staying creative, you know, finishing editing this film you know, just keeping busy, man, and thinking of new ideas and new concepts and doing film study and, you know, all the stuff that, you know, creatives like ourselves should still be keeping their eyes on the prize and doing and taking advantage of this, you know, quote unquote downtime, you know?
Yeah, I agree, man. I think that I hear a lot of people on social media, you know, saying they're bored and, you know, they watched every movie on Netflix and, you know, all these other stations, which it leads me to 2 points. One is to get into the digital space. That should be the primary goal. Mm-hmm. Get something in the digital space. So if you are in quarantine, at least you got something out there that's keeping you financially afloat.
Yeah.
And that's what my main goal is.
Yeah.
And then my second point is, you're right. Be creative. We had Dennis L.A. White. We had Dennis L.A. White on the show, and he said something that I'm gonna use. And he, you know, it's on him if he come back, me stealing it. But he said, "We are now in quarantine, but a creative's definition is pre-production of our life."
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's definitely a good time to like reflect and refine, and you know, maybe find some interests you weren't into, you know, prior to the situation, maybe new. I mean, it's crazy, and it might sound, you know, might sound wild, but the truth is there's a lot of opportunities out there in situations like this. Like I said, with what you're doing, I think is very smart, because, you know, especially it, you know, and, you know, whenever this whole situation is lifted and everything is, I can't say back to normal, because I don't think it'll ever just go back to how things were, but there's going to be tremendous opportunities for particularly independent filmmakers, because, you know, the big machines are going to have a tough road back to stumbling on their feet. And in the interim, all these digital platforms and TV networks and stuff need content. So people like ourselves that are self-starters and know how to go out and hustle up some money, or at least have the gear and go shoot something, and you could deliver some quality. I mean, even now, these, you know, digital platforms and whatnot is clamoring for content, because, you know, everybody's burning through everything they got on their page already, so they're looking for new films. And you know unfortunately it put us in a kind of a good situation, because we got a film in the can, so, you know, we've already got people eagerly waiting to look at it, because they need content. And moving forward, you know, I do believe this is going to change the landscape of the you know, theatrical film business. You know, again, I don't think that's something that's just going to jump right back to normal, but, you know, streaming platforms are just going to continue to grow. And the better you are at, you know, delivering quality content, the more opportunities that are going to be there for you. So I'm more of a positive thinker, where I just think of the upside. And then, you know, it just is obviously very unfortunate for a lot of jobs that'll probably never be recovered, you know, through all this and whatnot. But as creatives, I was telling somebody earlier, a producer friend of mine, I said, I know there's 100,000 quarantine scripts getting written right now, every different variation, which I'm not mad at.
That's what you should do.
Stay creative, man. Look at this as an opportunity to come up with something. And even if it's not necessarily about this current, you know, pandemic and whatnot, but just stuff, you know, that, you know, isolation is just spawns creativity, you know, at least for me, you know, especially the less distractions you have around. Eddie Griffin used to always say, you know, social media and just the media and all this kind of stuff is weapons of mass distraction. And it's true. Like, people that get so caught up in the daily hustle and grind of working and having to be out on the scene or dating or whatever you're doing. And when that rug gets snatched from underneath you, you know, if you a person that is a creative, it just, to me, like I said, I'm already kind of in my own zone anyway, but I just, you know, wouldn't implore all creatives, man, to use this downtime wisely. Like, man, like even you said, do what you just did, create a platform, you know, do something, you know, when you get left the scraps from the table, you make gumbo with it. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I think that if you are going to be doing anything, I think it should be creative. Like you said, if you got something that you always thought about, I want to paint, I want to be a painter. I think that should be something you should try. But I also want to add it to your point. I do believe that streaming services were going to take over anyway, eventually, but it was just such a root in the Hollywood of having that final, you know, even when you started, I wasn't around when you first started, but I bet any amount of money in my pocket that your goal was to get in the theaters.
Oh, man. Yeah. That was you know, just like how music, the landscape of music changed, you know, of what your end game was. So yeah, definitely, man. You know, like years ago, if you didn't have a theatrical release, your film was bootleg or it was considered a failure. They're like, ah, that's going direct to DVD. Ah, that's a BET movie or whatever. But now that kind of stuff is a win, you know, because for one, I think it's something like 92% of independent films lose money. So anyway, you could get, you know, I tell people all the time, man, doing independent films is not about just doing what you want to do. It's about doing something that the marketplace is in need of. You got to find, you know, where there's an area of necessity and use your creativity to tell those stories so that you could live to fight another day. Because man, as you and I both know, man, you get your investors their money back. Now you got an investor for your next project and then hopefully your next project. So, you know, it's just a matter of being an entrepreneur, you know, as well as being a creative, you know, and it took me years to realize that because I was doing films that I liked and that my cousins in Leimert Park liked. When I go down there to the back of the barbershop down at the Ivory Coast with my cousins Drew and Jaren and premiere my weed movie in there and we all in there snickering and laughing, that was success to me, you know. So there's just different levels of success. And then I finally realized, like, it's crazy because it's like a weird maturation for me, because I started off with a big theatrical release in My Baby's Daddy that I wrote and co-produced, but then I didn't like not having the creative control, so you know, I went delved into the independent film world. And you know, I know I kind of went on a rant, but yeah, but to answer your question, the ultimate success, you know, back starting in filmmaking was theatrical. And I think even now, like, that's obviously still everybody's goal, but it's got to make sense. You know, if you're gonna have your investors or you're gonna have a distributor make that P&A spin, you want to make sure that's print and advertising for those who don't know. But you want to make sure that you know that money's gonna come back. You know, that's the thing, is like you gotta, and it's horrible. And for years, like me 10 years ago would have punched me today in the mouth for talking like that, because before I was just like, I'm gonna do what I, you know, it comes from me and you got the same background, man, coming from being rappers and being in the hip hop circle. It's like, you know, we're gonna do what we want to do. Like, I don't want to be like nobody else. I want to do something that ain't nobody done. And I salute those that still take that path. But it's definitely, it's a long, windy road, especially as it relates to Black films. I mean, right now it's kind of a renaissance in Black films, so it's a great time to be doing urban content and whatnot. But it's still, you know, once you, there's kind of two boxes. Either you doing films that you could license to the, you could do them cheap, license them to the digital platforms and to the TV networks, or you do something artsy that's going to be in Sundance and Cannes and you know, the bigger festivals, ABFF. You know, if you do something that scores at these festivals, then that's a different approach. So those are kind of the two business models that I've seen that are working for independent filmmakers. Is either it's got to be art house and like super dope, or stuff that appeals to, you know, the networks and the streaming platforms. You know, that's pretty much the you know, it's got to be your goal when you're setting out and you know, writing your script and hopefully your business plans. Because I feel like every screenwriter should also write a business plan after you write your script. Because especially if you're trying to do it independent, you know, you need to be able to tell investors how they're going to get their money back. What films can you point to that perform like this film? You know, it makes your life simpler. And it doesn't mean you have to just plagiarize what other people are doing, but you just find ways to be creative to tell your story through these existing kind of narratives that win over and over again. Because, you know, it's been said in Hollywood, there's only like 7 or 8 original ideas and everything is just regurgitated over and over again. You know, like Titanic is just Romeo and Juliet on a boat. So if you look at most films, you're going to see they call touchstones in another film to say, oh, that's kind of like such and such, you know. And again, coming from the hip hop world at first, that was like the death of me to hear that. But then when I learned, you know, it's a business, man. It's a business. You gotta, and not even just talking about independent films, even big theatrical films. You know, you got somebody putting millions of dollars to release your film and produce it. You better make sure they make their money back.
Yeah, because if you want to keep going, if you want to continue to make films, you gotta make sure they make their money back.
Real quick, I've been in film jail before. That shit ain't no fun. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's not. It's not. But, you know, that brings me to another point, though. Think about this, though. So now the theatrical is definitely messed up right now.
Yeah.
Every major theater across the nation is closed. So the scenario is we got an investor back in January. Well, let's say we got them 8 months before that.
Yeah.
But we got the film in the bag in January.
Yeah.
All the money is in it. We all tied in. February come out of theaters closed.
Man.
Wow. So now, so you don't know how long it's going to be closed. And that, and that's a lot of filmmakers. So now let's fast forward. This thing is over with.
Yeah.
But now people just seeing how important streaming is, and they're scared to spend money. So people are not going out to the theaters anymore. So now, after a year of holding, that we just shifted, bro. Everything shifted.
Yeah, and it, man, it's a good thing, man. Jaleel White, who was in my first film, and he's still a good friend of mine, brother in arms, great writer. A lot of people don't know that about Jaleel White, but he's a great writer. Him and I developed several projects together over the years. But he told me one time, you know, rejection is God's protection. You know, sometimes when things get in your way and stop you from doing something, you're going to look back and be like, man. Because again, like I said, theatrical, man, that's just a huge investment. And you, and even, you know, man, you know, we had them discussions with His, Hers, and the Truth. And I eventually just had to be honest with myself and with the team and be like, this one ain't it. Like, we good for what we did with it, the BET, UMC route. Like, that's good money. We made our money back. We could fight another day. But to start investing P&A money and creating the DCPs and all that kind of stuff and duplicating them. Them things is $3,000 each. So you trying to not go to theaters, that's 30 bands. You know,
you're looking at don't forget the Dolby digital sound, bro. Yeah.
They don't take mix and man.
Yeah. They're not taking regular audio in the theaters, bro.
Nah, but like I said, man, that plays into people like our hands. Like, we cool with, you know, I'm obviously, my life's ambition is not to just keep doing low budget films, you know, $1 million and under, $500,000 and under. But if that's how I've got to get the bread and butter for now, then that's what we're going to do. And, you know, like I said, there's such an upside now. Like, there was a while, like, Netflix wasn't licensing content. They were, once they started creating original content, they had gotten to this place where they were like, oh, we ain't licensing nothing unless it's top shelf, you know, unless it's a big name star in it or blah, blah, blah. But now you look, Netflix right back in the game, especially in the urban space, big, because we, you know, we popping right now, man. I remember when we wasn't hot, man. I remember people told me, stop doing black films. You half white, tell some of the white boys stories. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I always believed in us, and I believed in our content. You know, not only am I a, you know, participant in the industry, but I'm a fan of films and the genre in general, and also the culture and moving the needle for us and telling our stories, man. There's a million... millions of great white filmmakers. I'm fans of a lot of them. There's not a lot of us in the business that are really reputable, where, you know, like how Spike Lee was back in the day. Whenever you seen a Spike Lee joint coming out, you was there. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? There. So, you know, there's very few of those. And there's some of them now, like Barry Jenkins and them cats have definitely raised the flag. So, you know, yeah. So it just, you know, it's important. It's important to me, you know, obviously to make money. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sit here and act like I do this just to impress. I was a backpack rapper. I'm not trying to be a backpack filmmaker and impress the 10 film snobs in the corner while everybody sit up here. Tyler Perry, damn near a billionaire. And people want to, you know, stun on him and be like, ah, he's trash. He's this. Hey, you can't tell the audience they wrong, man. That's one thing you can't do. And they show up for that, man. So
he got an audience, man. That's what, what's bringing.
Find your audience. That's all I say to people. And some of your audience may be his audience, you know, while you know, because you're basically, again, and this is the same mentality I developed in my later years in hip hop, where I just learned, like, once I watched somebody like Jay-Z, who was a, you know, street corner, battle rap, spitting bars type rapper, and then start making more pop appeal type records. And, you know, he started calling it Dumbing It Down, that it makes sense, man, because Jay-Z could have eased, like you said, I could rhyme like Common Sense, but I just sold 5 mil. I ain't rhyme like Common Sense. So it just, you know, it's I can't remember. I always forget my man's name, the old dope Andy Warhol, dope artist from back in the day. He always said it's a battle of art meets commerce. You know, you got to try to make those two things meet, where you could create some art that makes some money as well, because they're both equally as important. You know, at least, you know, in my eyes, I know a lot. I have this discussion a lot of times with younger filmmakers, and they get all in their feelings, and they're just like, I'm like, all right, bro, I'm telling you from what I did wrong. I'm telling you, so you ain't got to crash into all the walls on the way up like I did. Because I watch other cats that played the game the right way, and you know, not necessarily took a shortcut, but they just had a firm understanding of their audience. Like, you got to know who your audience is. Hope that they're reliable and they show up for you and make your, you know, your box office number show or your streaming number show or whatever it may be. Like, you know, you, you gotta tap into who these audiences are, who's watching your films, and what film like yours recently was successful in that genre. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So,
well, you gave me that advice, and we were in ABFF this year.
Tell me where we was at, though. Tell me where we was at. We got to stunt on them real quick. Where was we at? Because that was some boss shit going on, you know?
We was in, you mean at the time of conception of the thought?
Yeah, we was in South Beach, you know? South Beach, we sent it to Airbnb before the white party, you know what I mean?
Red pool table, you know what I'm saying? We was bossed up, you know what I mean? And you were very elated because you had just, you know, won, you know, saying, not, you know, you won, you got acquired, and, you know, the film, His, Hers, and the Truth is just... Yeah. Been acquired, and we knew what we had in store, which is paying off big right now because, you know, people are watching Tiny Wong. But you said, man, you need to do a black woman lead thriller or drama. That's what you said. Came out your mind.
Yeah.
I said to you, let's do it.
Yeah.
You said, no, you do it.
Yeah.
You need to write one.
Man.
When you got done saying that, we went to the airport. Remember, we went to the airport?
Yeah.
The whole time we were in the airport, this is running. I'm like, he's saying that for a reason. And I'm not going to not listen to him.
Yeah.
I know he has seven films under his belt. And we're going to get back to that first film because we got to have you got to teach the audience something for me.
For sure.
But I continued to write that and kind of conceptualize that film all the way for maybe 60 days. And I ended up writing it. And it's actually... going to be shot at the end of this year.
Yeah, I, you know, full disclosure, we got the same management team, so I know you got a lot of things you ain't really disclosed about that project yet, but I'm very proud of you. I'm proud to be your friend and your fellow teammate, regardless, but that same advice I give to you, I gave to a million cats, and nobody wants to listen, and that advice I gave to you was given to me. I just handed some jewels on to you that was told to me by distribution partners of mine, where they was like, hey, Colt, you know, I'm doing... my management always laughs. Vans will always laughs. He told me run down the names of my films, and it's My Baby's Daddy, Who Made the Cake Salad, Gangster Rap, The Glockumentary. That's the one that always kills him. Holly Won't, Hillbilly Highway. And I'm like, you know, and you know, being in my backpacker rapper mode, like, man, why Hollywood hating on me, man? Like, they don't like Gangster Rap, The Glockumentary? You know, but again, like, distribution friends of mine and colleagues like Brett Dismuke, Jeff Clanigan, Big Al, who used to be at E1, like, I used to just pick them dudes' brains and be like, what do I need to do? Not only that, just on the business side of it, like, I also had a lot of growth to do as a filmmaker. Like, my early films were not reflective of my work. Like, I would look at my film and look at Spike Lee film and be like, why doesn't my film look like that? Especially She's Gotta Have It, he did for 150 grand. Why can't I do that? And it just, you know, I started learning more so the art of, like, picking apart a film and being like, oh, look at the lighting. Oh, look at the composition. Oh, the blocking. Oh, okay. I'm just pointing and shooting. Like, I'm shooting coverage. Yeah. Like I accuse a lot of filmmakers of doing now. I'm like, that cat's not a filmmaker. He shoots coverage. You know, it's different when you have to learn to tell the story with the camera. You know what I'm saying? So, again, them jewels I handed on to you and I hand on to everybody come from two places, from people I know in the business that have told me that type of stuff, and also from trial and error of my own films where, you know, I've had films that have made people money. I've had films that lost people money. And I would much prefer to keep people making money because it's not a good feeling when you lose somebody's investment, you know, that gambled on you. You know what I'm saying? And you were guiding the ship and you drove the ship into the iceberg. You know what I'm saying? So.
Well, I agree with you on that, but we got to go back. So your first film, was it the potato salad film? Which one was it?
My Baby's Daddy was my first film.
Okay, so walk us through that, because I get a lot of emails and DMs about, you know, a lot of people sending me scripts, or sometimes they don't even send them. They just ask me what is the next step to be a filmmaker. And, you know, I have what I say to them, but I want the audience to hear what you have to say. You've been doing this longer than me.
Yeah.
You have a lot of films under your belt. And I know when you first started, you didn't have 150,000 laying around. You had to figure it out. So what's it like for Coke Daniels starting with a script with nothing to get it done?
Well, My Baby's Daddy came about because I was still rapping at the time. Like, I was the first, my group Madcap, we were the first group signed to Loud Records. And then I was in another group called Color Section. You know, we was big on the underground scene in LA. And at the time I had my first son, And, you know, me and his mother started going through all the baby mama drama. Then I had like two other friends at the same time had kids. So we'd be comparing stories. And I'm like, man, this should be a movie. And this is what I tell people all the time. This is so crucial. There's been a couple of things that I've done in my career that I just look back and I don't even know where that came from. I think it had to be divine of me having understanding the things that I didn't yet understand. But I moved a certain way that made things happen and move mountains. And I look back now and be like, how the hell did you think of that? So I went to a friend of mine who at the time was working with Dr. Dre. Dr. Dre was trying to start a film production company. And he had one of these cats from my hometown, Pasadena, Altadena, California, cat by the name of Ray, was writing for him. And I went to dude and I was like, because I didn't know shit about writing films. I was a fan of films, but I was a writer, you know, in terms of lyrics and stuff, but I wasn't a screenwriter. So I went to him and I said, man, I got this great idea, man. You should write it for me. You know what I'm saying? And he said, I can't do that. He's like, it's your idea. He said, but I'll show you some books that'll teach you how to write and you write it yourself. And that's what I did. It's the craziest story ever. You tell anybody in Hollywood this story, they don't believe you. I literally wrote Baby's Daddy. I didn't even have final draft. I had like a Word program on my mom's laptop computer from work. And I had to structure it myself. And through my relationships in the music business, I had came to know Eddie Griffin. And he was the only person I knew in Hollywood. So, you know, I met up with Ed. I took him the script. And the thing that blew him away the most is that he said all the time people would approach him like, I got this idea. I got this idea. He was like, Coke, you came with a script. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so he signed on to be in it. And this is when he was hot as fish grease. This was like Double Take, Undercover Brother days, you know, where Ed was, you know, he was getting it. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I tell people all the time, eternally grateful to that dude for taking a chance with me, because that's what put me in the business. So we got it set up in Miramax. They completely, shout out to Harvey, you know what I'm saying? That, you know, I got to work with Harvey Weinstein back then. Like, he actually came into Edit Bay and did the last film of our film of Baby's Daddy himself, because he liked the film so much. But they you know, they trashed it. I hated what they did with the film. Like, the film was, I hate that movie to this day, just because it was not my vision. Like, my vision was a movie like Fridays, but about relationships between men and women, you know, raw. The, you know, we had, in the original version, I had fights at the county office and, you know, the coming over and you having to get into it with your baby mom, boyfriend, and, you know, all the real stuff, because I was really living it. Me and a few of my friends, we compared stories and they were ridiculous. It was raw. It was an R-rated film. Then they turned it into Black, Three Men and a Baby. So, but again, what I learned there was, and it's so funny, I was through the whole production on the set, in the meetings, I was being so annoying to these people at Miramax and all the other producers, Happy Walters, who went on to run Revolutions, Relativity Media, you know, who was big a few years ago doing all the bit. They were at one point funding like 50% of the films in Hollywood, including all the Marvel films and blah, blah. But, you know, I was, and Jeremy Kramer, it's crazy. All those people I was working with went on to be big, like tycoons in the film business. So, but even then, I took heed to the words they said. Just like we started this conversation, when I handed you some jewels, they handed me something. They said, look, Coke, you're a great writer. You've never directed nothing in your life. Go direct something with your friends. Gather up some of your friends. Go raise some money. Shoot some films. Come back. And then you'll be directing. Because I was literally on the set like, man, fire this director. She don't know what she's doing. Like, let me take over. And a $10 million budget, mind you. So in hindsight, I laugh at myself so much, because that probably would have been the end of my career if they'd have let me finish directing that film, because yeah. I didn't know what the hell I was doing at that point. But it's seizing opportunities. It's thinking outside of the box. It's being a self-starter, you know, and like I told you, man, I've had a million people approach me. I got to, and this is the thing I like saying to them, especially if I know them well enough. You know, I'm a Leo and I'm light skinned, so I could already come off hella arrogant. So I try to tone that back sometimes when I can. But when they're like, hey, man, I got this great idea for a script, I say, so do I. You know what I mean? Like, I got 20 scripts written and 50 million other ideas. Like, do you have money attached? Do you have an actor attached? Well, if not, same game I was given. I'm like, here, let me point you to a couple books, you know, Save the Cat and the screenwriter's Bible, things like this, and study these books, go write your script, bring it back to me. You know how many scripts I've been brought back? Literally one. The only dude that did that was our cat that we messing with on the Donald Goins project. That author came back with a script, and you see 10 years later, I'm still hustling his script. So it just, you know, it's just, it's that's what's so crazy. Everybody's that's why I love telling my story. I love hearing other people's story because everybody's journey in this business is going to be different. And you can't compare yourself to somebody else's journey. You can't say, like, and I used to do it. I was trying to be Spike. I was trying to be F. Gary. And how many times, man, we didn't heard, it's like the next Fridays. Like, yeah. There ain't going to be no next Fridays. Fridays is Fridays. Let it be that. Let's build the next new franchise that's different from that. So it's just a matter of really just, man, being a hustler, being ambitious, being hungry, not thirsty. You know, you don't want to annoy people to the point where you thirsty, but let them know you hungry and ready. Like I used to blow Eddie Griffin phone up. And this was before the days of, caller ID with your name in the, is flip phone day still. So I would block, when he wouldn't answer my call, I'd block my number and call him back. And I knew he would answer it because, you know, back in the day, block numbers would always be Beverly Hills, CAA calling you, or William Morris, or one of the studios. Again, this is when communication was different. So that was my method. Now, had I not blocked my number and kept haggling that dude, I don't know if I'd be here. So a squeaky wheel gets the oil. And I was always been the squeaky wheel. I still am. But also, I'm also prepared. When I talk to people, I have a script. Now I've showed you the stuff and before, man, like the sales decks, you know, sometimes I have a top sheet budget. Like I come ready for the meeting. You know what I'm saying? Like I got all bases covered. I know what talent I want. I know where we should shoot, where the incentives are. You know, it's just a lot of stuff that as an independent filmmaker, you need to know and study. You need to have questions too. And the number one question you need to be the answer is, how am I getting my money back? Because that's what any smart person will ask you. Like, all right, I'm gonna give you this, whatever, 200,000, 3 million, whatever it is. How am I get it back? And you can't just say, I'm going to make a dope ass film. That's not the answer. That's not what they're looking to hear. They want to show me what distributors, what other films like yours have been acquired in this genre. How much did they get acquired? You know, you got to study the business. There's a site called Box Office Mojo that I study. You'd be surprised how many times I talk to filmmakers and they rambling off about how little this movie made or big this much made. And they're off. It's like, dude, that movie bombed at the box office. And now you're trying to do the same film. So when you take that to the powers that be, especially with black films, man, we all get tried by fire. They'll do a million white films in the same genre, but let one urban dance movie fail and there's no more for years to come until somebody sneaks through the cracks and gets another one. But then they want all the urban dance movies again. So it's like a wave of genres and things that distributors mainly, you know, and importantly to your financiers, just having a, you know, exit strategy and a distribution plan. So, it just, you know, like I said, man, the way I got in the business was so backwards and crazy. Even now when I look back at it, especially when I tell the story, even the people at Miramax was like, so, Coke, how many scripts have you written? Like, where did you come from? Oh, this is my first script. Wait a minute. What? Like, this is the only script you've written? Yeah, I just wrote this. I knew Eddie. I showed it to him. He gave it to William Morris. And here we are. And it's just, you know. But it's been a lot harder struggle since then. But it's been more creatively rewarding because even though I say I matured through my films and I laugh at some of my films and the content of them, but I'm still a fan of all of them, man. They still all my babies. And the key thing, whether they're whack or horrible or classic or whatever, you know, is you know, art is subjective, but regardless, they're mine. They say written, produced, directed by Coke Daniels, you know, so these are, and I stand by them, you know, and I wasn't always the filmmaker I am now. And 2 years from now, I won't be this filmmaker anymore. I'll be even more advanced, hopefully, because with every film, I learn something new and say, oh, next time, don't do that. Okay. And it's you know, it's been a blessing, though, man. Like Quentin Tarantino, I believe, said he didn't go to film school. He went to films. So that's an important part of what I do, too, is film study, man. Like I study all the greats.
I think that's an automatic thing. Once you shoot your first film, all of a sudden you don't watch films. You actually study them.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm looking at light directions and all that. But I do want to say this though: you stand behind all your films as you should. You know, you started from nothing and ended up with I think seven finished movies.
Eight now. We just did Fruits of the Heart. Yeah.
Okay, so Fruits of the Heart is the one I want to touch on in a second. So on His, Hers, and the Truth. We had our first meeting, me and you, and we were figuring out a way to work the budget so the film could be shot. Forget the naysayers. This is what we're trying to figure out. And I witnessed a bunch of people from different departments all come together to make sure this film was done.
Yeah.
Nobody was looking for a big payday. Nobody was trying to get super rich. They were just trying to get Coke Daniels project done, which it was a great project. Yeah. In that project, you did a shot that I seen. It was an overhead shot.
Yeah.
The movie's out now, so you'll let me talk about it.
Yeah,
you know, back in the editing bay, you were like, shut up.
Yeah. You was like, can I put it on Instagram? I'm like, no, hold on.
Yeah. Yeah. But since it's out, you did a shot that, you know, luckily your actors had great hair to do this. And the shot was amazing. And you said you've been waiting to do that for the right moment for your whole career. And you got it from a certain person.
Yeah.
You know, and you got it from Spike Lee. Mm-hmm. Spike Lee. And you pulled it off. I thought it was a great shot. And I remember you telling me that people were telling you, no, do a different shot. And you were like adamant, no, this is the shot, no matter how, get it. And it paid off.
Hey, and everybody that sees that film, when I'm sitting there at least, they go, man, that's an amazing shot. I got to credit Ashley a lot too. Ashley is absolutely gorgeous. Her hair is amazing. So she, you know, Brad's a great looking fella too, but I think they get more entranced by the Ashley angle because it's just with her, just the whole composition of it, the practical light on the nightstand. And again, one day when we link up, man, I'm going to show you the Spike Lee shot and you're going to laugh because I just straight ripped it. But I think it was Spielberg or somebody says, you only steal from the best. You know, and honestly, Spike Lee didn't invent that shot. I guarantee if you go back and look at Fellini or Hitchcock or somebody, you're going to see that same shot. I think the only shot that's exclusive to Spike is that dolly shot that he always does where he puts the subject on the dolly and pushes it down. Yeah. That's a Spike Lee.
I think that might be, what's his name too? Spielberg as well. When he focused pulling and the dolly at the same time.
Well, no, that's Scorsese that does that.
Scorsese,
I tried to do that on his last film and we didn't have the tools. I was mad. We were supposed to have them. And I was, when we went to get the shot, I'm like, this, put the zoom lens on, but we got them Cook lenses instead. So we couldn't afford the zoom. So it was well worth the sacrifice to have them anamorphic Cook lenses as opposed to have the zoom for that one scene, you know?
Well, that's the point we want to get to next. We don't talk about that movie yet. We want to give people the big step up that you
got.
So on that shot, on that dolly shot you're talking about with Spike, I actually did probably a 5 foot in turn, and it actually worked. It worked. Just only 5 feet, all I had to do it. It worked. It was like, you know, just like you. Every time somebody see it and it's sitting next to me, they go, oh, that's a great shot, you know. So
for sure.
I was able to pull that off. So we have this thing called random thought in this podcast too, Cole. Okay. And you just gave me the random thought. You brung it up. I already had a preconcerns. It was a random thought. Okay. So I got to go on break real quick. So right after that, we're going to come back to the random thought. So pause for a second.
And now it's time for Man Robinson's random thought of the day.
Okay. So random thought is this. So we just mentioned that you only steal from the great, right? You only steal from the great. So my random thought is, since I study movies, I don't watch movies. Maybe people that watch movies never see this or they think it's normal. But almost every movie, let's say 90%, when someone's in frame or they're at an establishing part of the film and the protagonist or whatever supporting character is not in that scene, they walk into that scene. They say the same thing every time. Do you know what that is?
It's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't think of it.
What are you doing here?
Yeah.
Why do every single movie, no matter what the budget is, all do that? They all do it.
He had that in Fruits of the Heart. I'm pretty sure it's in His Heart and the Truth. It's hilarious.
It's just what's done. Like I watched Ozark the other day. Amazing.
If it wasn't you, if it was somebody else asking, I wouldn't be here right now because I was binge watching Ozark and it just was, you know, I was so not again because it's you and I love talking about films. I was like, all right, I'm gonna take a break, go rock with man. But when we hang up, I'm right back on it. That show is amazing, man. Amazing.
Yeah, I finished it two nights ago, but they do it. I don't know what episode you're on, but you're gonna see it. What are you doing here? It's just like
that's what your next film should be. What are you doing here?
I should. Like they do it every damn movie. Yeah. So
that's hilarious though. The other thing is they always say your film should be about a guy or about a girl. That's how your pitch should be. If your movie is not, it's about this guy or it's about this girl, you're not telling a good story, you know, because that's something that's relatable to everybody. You know, you get people's attention immediately when you say, man, it's about this guy. Or it's about this lady who, you know what I mean? It that's how your pitch should start. It should be about this. I think that's in Save the Cat, in fact. You know, it's either about this guy or about this girl.
I mean, I read Save the Cat too. That's before I wrote the script I just told you about. But yeah, it's also in our natural DNA. Whenever we get ready to lie, if we want to know, we want to ask somebody something. Hey, man, what happens if somebody drink too many 40s? And they say, what? And you say, well, it's this guy. It ain't me. It's this guy.
The other thing too, this is the key. This is a way to tell people are lying. And I think this is like some FBI or CIA type shit. But when they answer your question with a question, even test it with your kids. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because you know what it is? They're trying to give their mind time to catch up and figure out what the lie is. Where you like, you know, where was you at? Where was you at last night? Where was I at? Lying. Yeah. You're about to tell a lie. That's not even start. So
yeah, that's exactly it, man. And I think that when we write, and this is Save the Cat too. It's pauses. It's things like that to make acting real and writing it actually. And
writing to me should be very conversational, you know, and that's how I try to, you know, I sit here while I'm writing and act out all of my roles. You know, I'm sure if anybody, I'm sure my kids or whatever have walked by one time or another and been like, what is he doing? I'll be sitting there acting out a whole scene, you know, because I just got to kind of make sure that the dialogue is conversational, you know, because otherwise when you're reading it, it feels stiff. You know what I'm saying? Like it just, you know, you've read bad writing before, you know, just you're like, I don't even, you're on page 10. You're like, I want all these people to die. Like, I don't care about any of these characters right now. Like, I want a shark to come eat everybody right now. This is stupid. So, so it's important to be, and in turn, you know, you got to be a people person and a people watcher. More importantly, like I'm a kind of person where, you know, I talk a lot once I get to know you, but if I don't know you, I'm in a new environment, I'm just sitting back and observing. And one of my favorite things to do is people watch and just, you're sitting at a mall. Well, when we used to sit at malls and parks and stuff like that and just watch people walk by and wonder what their story is and their backstory and the decisions they're making and why they make them. It's almost like I feel like if I wasn't doing this, I'd probably be a psychologist because I'm just very interested in what makes people tick. And I think that that's an important part of you being a good writer or a good filmmaker is you got to always, as you know, man, there's the backstory, there's the character arcs, like all this stuff is relative to what is this person after? You know, I think I always can't, and Hitchcock is one of my favorite. I think he calls it the Mumford or the Munson or something like that. It's the thing that people live and die for, you know, that whatever that green thing was in that briefcase in Pulp Fiction, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's that type of thing that kind of drives your story that makes it relatable to people where, you know, they understand the mission you're after, you know, trying to get the girl. Everybody understands trying to get the girl. It's reverse spectrum for women. Trying to get the guy, the dream guy. We could all relate to that. So it just, you know, it's the human experience. And I think those are the best films that capture, you know, the human experience in its true form, you know?
I think I'm going to play the dream guy in my next film, though. Yeah. Bunk it up. I'm going to be the dream guy.
I've already seen a couple of films. I already tried it. It didn't go well. I didn't go well. It's up on Tubi. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna give it a shot. I'm gonna give it a shot myself. What's the name of it? I'm gonna check it out on Tubi. Tubi is a good place. What's the name?
Hollywood. Yeah, Hollywood. It's up on Tubi. I'm still very proud of it. It was about satiring Hollywood, much like Hollywood Shuffle. Again, this was always me trying to be somebody else before I learned how to be Colt Daniels. You know, that was me trying to be Robert Townsend. I tried to be Spike Lee. I tried to be F. Gary. Then I was just like, you know what? Definitely learn from all them cats, but figure out what your voice is. You know, we all have a unique voice in how you do things, you know, from the way you walk, how you dress or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the same kind of, you know, I like to call them my tentacles that I like to put in. Those are the things that, you know, spiders have, you know, the many arms or whatever, or is it an octopus? I don't know. It's a lot of arms that, you know, I like to put into the DNA of my projects, you know, where you watch it and people like His, Hers, and the Truth, my people that know me, that I grew up with, even my sons, they were like, Dad, that's you talking. Like, this Brad James sounds like you. Like, that is all you. Any woman I've dated that's seen has been like, that's you. You're that asshole. That's you. So, and that's because I infuse my voice into my projects now. And again, I've made them, you know, I think I've found my own little niche and my own little lane that I could kind of stick to and ensure that I'm able to, you know, build a nice catalog. I mean, I already, like I said, Holly Won't, Potato Salad. Potato Salad is a certified bootleg classic. Like, that was before, you know, Netflix and all this kind of stuff, or, you know, where there's data available. It was still the DVD days. I know it was highly successful on DVD, but that doesn't even reflect its true success because it's such a bootleg phenomenon. So, But yeah, man, I just, you know, it's a matter of like, you know, just finding your voice, man. What makes you unique? You know, what story can you tell, and how are you going to tell it where it doesn't just look like every other film that's out there that tried to tell a similar story, you know?
I agree. I do have one more point, and this is the one I've been waiting on right here.
All right.
Fruits of the Heart. Okay.
Yep.
You were able not only to pull in a cast that's phenomenal, you also were able to upgrade and use some of the best cameras in the industry, along with the lenses that you just mentioned. So I know, being a filmmaker, when you posted those cameras, I knew what time it was. I know what it's going to look like. I know how you write. I know the story is crazy. I know the actors. I know Little Mama is one of the best actresses.
Man,
you know, she they probably would know. Yes. Yeah,
she's killing it right now. Mama got a bunch of projects coming out. Yeah, she's killing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just want to congratulate you on that, because I know what that feels like. That is a major, even from the one we did together, His, Hers, and the Truth, it was a major, major accomplishment to be able to shift in that fast. I think it was only a year difference.
Yeah, it's crazy. It was like, probably like a year and a half in total from when we wrapped to where we were shooting in Dublin. We were out in front of Theater Dublin where we had the premiere. And I think I was talking on Instagram, and I was like, it was like a year and some change ago. We did the premiere here. I'm like, that wasn't even a year ago. It was like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, I mean, but that, cool. that's, you know, that's back again, testament to executing a successful business model, to where you make sure you get people their money back. And now, not only do you have those people on your team, you're able to show other people, look, we made this film for that. And then this is what we made back, and this is what we're reinvesting. And now we project this film will make that much, you know? So again, exit strategy, business model. That's the thing that every script I write, and Vans will tell you this, I have a sales deck for it, you know, because that's the business model and the strategy that we're going to execute in order to, as best as we can. You can't, in this business, it's all risk associated, you know, but you know, to the best of your ability, you want to put your investors and yourself, you know, you want to have as little exposure as possible, you know? So
when can we expect this film though? I know you have it in your editing bay, in your spaceship right now. When can we expect it?
I'm confident, honestly, before this whole thing happened, we were looking at next year, but now I feel pretty confident we're going to get it out there this year sometime, just because, you know, we were doing the whole, like, you know, we had some people interested in putting up P&A money already, and we were talking theatricals, but now I'm like, I just want to be on that front page of Netflix. That's equivalent to a theatrical now. Like my boy, I got shout out my boy Datari Turner, who just killed it with Uncorked. Like that's the hottest film on Netflix right now. And that's equivalent to a theatrical release. The amount of buzz that film is going to create. And I'm sure it's going to receive some rewards at, you know, some of these awards ceremonies and stuff like that. So, you know, it's about putting points on the board, man, and leveling up. You know, this film is better than His, Hers, and the Truth. And the next film is going to be better than Fruits of the Heart. And, you know, that's just my ambition. I don't want to get too stuck on any one of them and be like, until, you know, there'll probably come a day, you know, hopefully if I'm fortunate enough to be like, man, I'll never do something this good again. Like, this is just amazing. Because, again, us as filmmakers, you know this, man. You know, you've been through the same thing I've been through, where we spend, you know, there's been times I spent years, you know, tailoring projects and now let me reshoot this and do that. We're never satisfied. But I had to just get past that point. Like, man, like Tupac, I never watched the interview one time. He's like, man, I go in the studio, I drop my lyrics. What's the last line you said? That's the hook. Lay that shit, mix it, put it out there. You know, that's my philosophy. And even though it's rough and it may not have been perfect, it's never going to be perfect if you're a real filmmaker. You know, if you had $100 million budget, you're going to wish you had 2 million at the end of the day. I mean, 200 million, you're going to be like, damn. If I just had that other 100 million, I could have blown up all of downtown Atlanta instead of just one building. You know what I'm saying? So, you know.
Yeah, I agree, man. And we thank you so much for coming on to the show, man. You bring a lot of knowledge and you bring a lot of tips. I got one tip myself. It takes paper to, let me tell you what it is. It takes paper to make paper. Yeah. In other words, have a script in order to get the money.
Hey,
that's my tip.
If it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage. You know what I'm saying?
There it is. All right. So we thank you again for coming, man. You are great. I can't wait to work with you again. I think we already have something lined up. I think you are a producer on one of these projects, and we're going to kill it, man. Absolutely. So thank you. Peace in the Middle East. All right, brother. Thanks for coming out.
All right, no problem.